Competing on Terms of Equality and Blending In, Government Services with Federation Style by Kristen Cox. There is a photo on the page, the caption, Kristen Cox. From the editor, Kristen Cox is the executive director of the Utah Governor's Office of Management and Budget. Many will remember her distinguished service as a part of our government affairs team almost 20 years ago. Here is what she said on the final presentation of Friday afternoon, July 12.
I love this organization, and the older I get, the more I appreciate the profound philosophy this organization embraces. I want to thank President Riccobono putting on a conference not quite this large but close. The amount of time and energy that goes into this with the staff of NFB, all your time and energy to make this a great conference. I want to thank big thanks to all the staff at headquarters. So, yes, they deserve a round of applause. So I run the Office of Management and Budget. I'm senior staff to Governor Herbert. He's the third governor I've worked for. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my job, but the journey to get here. So essentially, I'm the COO and the CFO for the state of Utah. I manage a budget of almost $19 billion. And we do all the revenue projections. I manage a team of economists, and we do all the operations for the agencies. So it is a complicated, and then I do, you know, deal with the legislature. In fact, originally, way back in the day when I was completing my individualized plan for employment, I wanted to be Diane Fossey and study gorillas in the Congo. I never did that, but I do work with the legislature, so maybe, I'm just saying, it's a little close. So, you know, I have a great job, it's rewarding, and but I couldn't be here in the position I am today without this organization. And I want to share a little bit of my journey of how I got here and my gratitude. But before I do that, I do want to announce that there is a $10,000 donation coming to the organization. I wrote a book with a colleague and his colleague who are fans now of this wonderful organization from Japan. We're doing a workshop there, and all the proceeds will be coming to the NFB in August for $10,000. So we're doing our best to get the mission of NFB to the entire world, and wherever I go, people are impressed and inspired and more committed to helping our cause. So, you know, my journey is probably one that many of us have encountered. I, you know, started going blind at 11. I did large print. I did magnifying glasses. I went through every dang plan you can imagine, IEP, IPE, a ticket to work program. And after years of being in the system and the school system, I graduate school with no skills. Can't read Braille, can't do cane travel, no adaptive technology. And yet I'm independent, I'm ambitious, I have dreams, desires. But the idea of holding down a job seemed elusive to me. Until I came across, there was an invitation to go to a chapter meeting of the NFB in Utah, one of our local chapters, and I said, sure, I'll take it up and go. And I met the Gardner brothers. Many of you hopefully know the Gardner brothers. And that's where the beginning of my new life started. Norm Gardner introduced me to a Braille speak at the time, and we had had our first son. I did not know how to read Braille, and I wanted to read to our son, so I would teach myself one letter a day, and then I would go to grade two, and then I could read Hop on Pop, and then I finally read The Hobbit, which I'm a big fan of the Hobbit series, right? So, you know, I learned Braille, and then I started to dabble a little bit more in the philosophy and this idea of cane travel. So I would get my cane, but I wasn't quite convinced that I needed a cane, and I was a little embarrassed and had some shame about that. So I'd have one of those collapsible canes, and I'd stick it in my backpack, and when I thought I needed it, I'd pull it out. And I, you know, I'm sure people thought I was crazy, because I'm like, do you need a cane? Do you not need a cane? What are you thinking? So I'd pull my cane out when I thought I needed it and then hide it away, because I hated to people, you know, just stare at me. And one day I'm walking home, had just used my cane, stuck it back in my backpack, and I fell right into a manhole. And the good news is that it was in the middle of winter, so the manhole was covered with ice-cold water. The bad news is that it was covered with ice-cold water. It was freezing. It was humiliating. And it was really an eye-opener for me to start thinking about, look, to this point, I had been in the Federation for a couple years, and I intellectually understood what we said. I could say the words that with the right training, support, and opportunity, blindness could be reduced to the level of inconvenience. And I could say the words that the biggest problem with blindness is not blindness itself, but the misperceptions and stereotypes we have about blindness. I could say the words, but I don't think I got them in my heart yet. So then I had this amazing opportunity to come back and work at the headquarters of the National Federation of the Blind. Dr. Maurer was willing to take a chance on me, Mr. Gashel, Dr. Jernigan at the time. And that was the most eye-opening experience I've had. And I want to tell you some experiences there, four lessons that have impacted my life forever, my personal life, and today how I work in government, you know, when we tackle big problems, that Federation philosophy impacts everything I do. So one of the first things I did when I was back at the NFB, and Mr. Gashel, I don't know if he'll remember this or not, I know we now say first names, but I can't say Jim Gashel, just Mr. Gashel. It was maybe the first week back there, and I was trying to figure out what the heck I'm even going to do. He takes me to lunch, and we're walking down, and I was so impressed by Mr. Gashel, so articulate, so smart, right, just on his game. And as we are walking to get lunch, I remember asking him this silly question: how much can you see? Because in my mind, still then, even though I knew the words, I had this belief that how competent or how successful I could be still had something to do with how well I could see. Fortunately, Mr. Gashel and the Gashel Forum just kind of ignored my question, and we kept going on. And in the months ahead, I work with such amazing people, including Dr. Maurer and the rest of the team, who I didn't even start to wonder, can they see or not see, or how much or how little? People everywhere were successful and competent in making a difference, and all of a sudden that question of how much can you see became irrelevant. When I was running for lieutenant governor, one of the headlines said, blind Mormon woman running for governor. I was like, wait, what about the bald Jewish man running for Senate? Like, why are you saying that? But we were out one day with Governor Ehrlich, and there had been a big flood. And he had toured the site with his helicopter, looking down, you know, at the site. And he got off, and they said to him, the press said, how would your lieutenant governor candidate do this job? Like, she couldn't have seen. And it was so great because he got what I was starting to learn or had learned by this point, which was there's many, many ways to get information other than your eyes, right? Many, many other ways. He knew then what I had finally learned, that vision does not determine our success. It does not determine our success, right? We know in the Federation with the right training, the right supports, the right opportunities, that is the mark of our success. And so I went on my journey. So I started to kind of get this idea vision wasn't the end all. And this other second lesson was so important in the Federation, and President Riccobono talked about it yesterday in his remarks, but that is excellence. I remember doing my first fact sheet for Washington seminar and giving it to Mr. Gashel, and it came back just redlined and redlined and redlined. I mean, I would spend hours working on these things, and the sentences were never good enough. And then I would go in with Dr. Maurer and study elements of style with grammar. Do you split your infinitives or not? Where do you punctuate? Do you remember this? Mark Riccobono was in one of these classes. I came to understand that excellence, high standards, being our best was critical. That if we want society to accept us, we've got to be our best, right? We can't go out to the workplace and, you know, compete on equal grounds when we're not bringing our best game to the table. And just because, right? Look, I can't tell you how many classes I had taken in high school or college where no one gave me the kind of feedback I got at headquarters at NFB. No one had. Because I was blind, they don't want to hurt your feelings, they don't have the expectations that you can do it, whatever the reason is. This is after 8 years of being in a system with every dang IEP and IPE you could have. I didn't have the basic skills. And not till I got to the NFB when something changed. The expectations were elevated. They expected much more from me in everything I did. And I've come to appreciate how important that is, because we will live into the expectations people set for us. And because of that, we should set pretty dang high expectations for ourselves. So that was the second lesson. Two more. The third lesson was something, a story that Dr. Schroeder, who's just, I've had so many amazing mentors in this room, you know, Joanne Wilson, and I can just list them on and on. But Dr. Schroeder told the story one day, and I'm going to repeat it if I can. I know I get the name right wrong, so forgive me. But this story really impacted me, and I use this today with our own cabinet members as we ask them to really go after big results. And government's such a mess. I'm in it and I can't stand it. It's such a mess. And we're asking them to improve, and they're always telling us every reason why they can't. And this story has always affected me. Dr. Schroeder, if I get it wrong, I apologize, but this is how I remember it. He was working with a boy. I call him Tony, but I think his name was Vincent. Anyway, he's working with this little boy, Tony, who wanted to learn to play tag. And this little boy, you know, I have two sons, they're here today, and, you know, boys, daughters, I love to play tag, wanted to play tag. How do you play tag as a blind kid? And Dr. Schroeder really thought about this. How do I help this kid play tag? And the next day when Dr. Schroeder came back, Tony came up to him and had figured out how to play tag. He had taken jars and put pebbles in the jars and just given them to his friends. No high-tech solution, anything like that. Just put jars with pebbles so he could hear his friends play. In fact, we tried this with my own kids once. Instead of doing jars with pebbles, I had everyone turn their phone on with music so I could hear where they were. We all wore blindfolds and played tag. It was a blast. So this little boy, Tony, had the best mindset, because so many times as adults, we just assume a thing can't get done. Right? We give all the reasons why the thing is difficult, all the excuses, all the yes buts. But what's so remarkable about Tony, it was not an issue of if the thing could be done, but how. Right? When we can understand it's not if, but how, and the NFB teaches us about creative problem solving, that yes, we may think do things differently, but we still get the job done. So every day at work, you know, I'm working with economists and spreadsheets and graphs and revenue predictions. And every day, almost, there's a new challenge. How am I going to access this? How am I going to communicate on that? And there's always a way, if we assume the thing is possible, and it's just we've got to figure out the solution. We just need to be creative problem solvers, all right? And this is so important. Again, the Governor Herbert, when he first took office, he made, charged all the agencies, this was right after the recession, to improve their performance by 25%. Our agencies, our cabinet members were like, this is impossible. I said, no, because I've learned in the NFB, nothing's impossible, right? So I take this philosophy, everything. So the third lesson is not if the thing can happen, but it's how, and to be a creative problem solver. This last lesson was so critical. I was so blessed to go through residential training, the NFB way. Actually did it at the NFB Center, and I was so grateful for that. It was about, 4 or 5 months, and we had one son at the time, Tanner, and went and did the, you know, sleep shade training and structured discovery and the whole bit, and it was so great. This is where it became less of an intellectual exercise to really getting it in my heart, what this meant to be an independent cane traveler and, you know, to learn really the skills of blindness. And I remember working with Tony Cobb. He was my own instructor for the day, and we were out practicing. And then if you guys know that park across from the headquarters, what's that park called? I can't believe I forgot the name. Yeah, Riverside Park. Yeah, so I'm at this park doing my practice for the day, and I cannot get out of this park. I can hear where the highway is, right? And every time I'm walking, I'm like hitting a bench. I hit grass. I hit dirt. I cannot get out of this dang park. It's like the Minneapolis airport. I hate that airport. The airport makes no sense to me, and I feel like I travel there once a month. Anyway, so I'm in this park and I can't get out of the park. And I just stop because it's frustrating. It felt hard to me. I did not know my way forward. And Tony Cobb just let me struggle a little bit, which is what we do here, right? Let me struggle enough. And then he came up behind me and he said something that really I think about frequently. And he said, "Kristen, you've got to learn to walk through your confusion and your fear. You're not going to get any, you'll get no new information by standing still. You've got to take a step into the unknown to get the new information." And that was so impactful for me. As blind people, we can sit back and wait for the world to come to us, but if we do that, it's going to pass us by. Sometimes it can feel uncertain, and sometimes when I'm traveling, I was in Japan last year, traveled by myself, I felt at first, how am I going to do this? I set that aside because I know in the NFB, we know about persistence. We know about taking one step at a time. We know that when we set our mind to big goals and things that are important to us, even if we're not sure how we will achieve it, we know that we can if we just take the next step through our confusion, through maybe our fear, through the uncertainty. That was a game changer then, and it's a game changer in my profession today. So when the agencies say something can't be done, what do you think I tell them? Yes. There's no mercy. We have a lot of work still to do in Utah. We've made great progress, but vocational rehabilitation was transferred from the Department of Ed to the executive branch 18 months ago or so, and we have a lot of work to do there. And people, sometimes in government bureaucracy, can list all the reasons why the thing is impossible and why we can't do it. But again, in the NFB way, we will never let obstacles impede us from achieving the goals, either professionally or personally, that we have. So I want to leave with this. The National Federation of the Blind is one of the most profound organizations in the world. I've associated with senators and Congress and different associations, but the profound and simple philosophy that this organization embodies impacts everything we do, from legal action to training and education, but more importantly, it penetrates our hearts. And it's what gives us the hope and the ability to live out our dreams and to hopefully make a positive contribution in the world around us. And with that, I'm deeply grateful to the organization. I'm excited that we can give the $10,000 donation. The governor also wanted me to make sure to extend his gratitude. He's spoken at this group. I told him I was speaking. He knows we have work to do for the remainder of his term. He's committed to setting up a very robust program to hire people who are blind within state government. I will be working closely with the NFB of Utah to make this happen. And working with, hopefully, insight from Dr. Schroeder. Mr. Gashel and I had some interesting conversations last night because we're going to get the job done in Utah. And with that, I thank you, my Federation family.
All right. Well done.